I'm not going to say a word only because I know he's going to give me a check. But if he wasn't the one holding the money, he would get a piece of my mind right now. No, some things never change. As you might know, you might not know. Are we on? Okay, there we go. If I'm not mistaken, I am one of the few priests, and I think I might be only one of, I think now there's only two Franciscans in the whole world who are 1K members on United Airlines, which is the highest frequent flyer you can become. Coming here yesterday was just in this year. Coming here yesterday was my 104th flight on United Airlines this year. I've been on the road for the past 5 weeks. I started off in Danville, Pennsylvania, giving a retreat to the Sisters of Christian Charity, and then from there I went to Loretto, Pennsylvania, where I gave a retreat to the Third Order Regular Franciscan Friars, the one who runs Franciscan University in Steubenville and St. Francis University in Loretto. And then from there, I went to Memphis, Tennessee, where I gave a workshop on St. Bonaventure to the Poor Clare nuns. And then last week, I was preaching to the Sisters of Mercy in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And then I'm here with y'all. I'm here with y'all today. Go home tomorrow, and I get 4 nights to sleep in my own bed, and then it's back on the road again, as Willie Nelson would say. But, so I do a lot of flying, and because I'm a 1K member, oftentimes it's not unheard of for United Airlines to automatically, for free, bump me up to first class. So, I had just come back, this was this year, during Lent. Immediately, usually from the middle of January to Palm Sunday, every week I'm somewhere preaching a parish mission. So I had just come back. I had just come back from Virginia Beach, Virginia, and had flown back to DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth, where I live 40 miles west of the airport. My flight was delayed, so I didn't get back to DFW till about 10:30 at night, and then it's always the hour drive from the airport back to the friary. So I didn't get home till about, if I remember correctly, like 10 minutes after 12. And the following morning, I was booked on the 6 a.m. flight to go to Denver, Colorado, San Diego, California, where I was going to be preaching a parish mission. And so it was late, and I figured, well, I'm going to just sleep. Usually when I'm on that 6 a.m. flight, I get up at 1:30 in the morning, I take my shower, I do a little work, do a little writing, and then I have to be on the road at 3:30 in the morning to get to the airport in time, and time to get the shuttle, to get into the terminal to catch my flight. So I get to the United terminal, I check in, and I'm thinking, thank you, Jesus. One of those lucky days when I'm bumped up to first class on the 6 a.m. flight from DFW to San Diego, a four-hour flight. So I get into my first class seat, and there's one of these television screens in front of me, and so I'm looking around for a movie, for something to watch. And I know, it was 6 a.m., but it was for free. So when the stewardess asked me if I wanted anything to drink, I said, yeah, I'll have a bourbon and Diet Coke. Well, she looked at me like, whoo, he's an early starter. But I'm thinking, I'm in first class. I'm feeling like a Jesuit. I might as well act like a Jesuit, you know? So there I am. I'm sipping on my bourbon and Diet Coke. We take off, and I'm watching this movie. And when we reach 37,000 feet, our cruising altitude, as they always do, the pilot comes on and he says, we've reached our cruising altitude of 37,000 feet. And he said, so I'm going to turn off the fasten seatbelt sign, ding, and the fasten seatbelt sign went off. And he said, thank you for choosing United Airlines, and we're going to try to get you to our destination of San Diego as quickly and as safely as possible. The stewardesses are here to help you in any way, shape, or form they can, so please don't hesitate to ask them if you need anything. At which point he got off, and I'm sitting there watching my movie, and then it hit me. Did I or did I not lock my car when I left it in the parking lot? Did I? Did I lock? Did I press the button to lock my car or not? And this became an obsession with me as I was flying. Did I or did I not? And then I began getting angry with myself, and I was filling myself with guilt. I was saying to myself, Albert, how stupid can you be? How stupid can you be? All you have to do is press that little button and a doggone car is locked. So I'm beating myself up with guilt, and then I'm filled with worry and anxiety. I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to get back, and somebody's going to break into my car, and oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? So there I was, in first class, but mentally, I was stuck in the parking lot at DFW. And isn't that the story of all of us? We all have a first class seat. It's called your life. And yet most of us, even though we're in the first class seat, most of us are still stuck in the parking lot. And we're either living in the past, beating ourselves up with guilt, or we're living in the future, being filled with worry and anxiety. First class, the movie continues, and yet mentally, we're not here. Well, let me tell you something that I've learned. Did you know that guilt, worry, and anxiety are learned behaviors? They are learned. Let me tell you something. Newborn children do not know guilt, do not know worry. Newborn children do not know the past. And they do not know the future. All a newborn child knows is the present moment. The newborn baby, she sees something funny and she laughs. The newborn baby, he's hungry and he cries. Newborn children naturally live in the present moment. But watch that little baby grow up, because she will begin to hear her mother say to her, you just wait until your father comes home. And the newborn baby begins to learn guilt. Or the newborn baby begins to hear, oh, honey, I don't think we're going to be able to pay for all of this. And all of a sudden, the newborn baby learns worry and anxiety. Guilt, worry, and anxiety are learned behaviors. Newborn babies don't know them. And I suspect that is why Jesus says in the gospel, if you want to enter into the kingdom of heaven, you must become like a child. You got to get out of the past with your guilt And you got to get out of the future with your worry and anxiety. And you got to come back home and live in the present moment. I have heard many people give talks about the importance of living in the present moment. But you know what irritates me about all those talks? Everybody glibly says how important it is to live in the present moment, but nobody shows you how to do it. Nobody shows you how to do it. So, I want to do three things in this talk right now. First of all, I want to talk about why is it important to live in the present moment. So, in effect, I want to give you a spirituality of the present moment. Secondly, I want to give you a practical technique how to do it, a four-step technique. And then finally, I want to talk to you about the effects that living in the present moment can have upon you. So, why do we do it? How do we do it? And what are its effects? He was a Jesuit priest who died in 1751. There is no image, there is no sculpture of him. We have no idea what he looked like. He obviously did not make a great effect on the 18th century. But 110 years later, after his death, 110 years after his death, a Jesuit priest gathers his retreat notes from 110 years ago, and he puts them into book form. And this becomes one of the great spiritual classics. A book that scholars, myself included, a book that scholars put on the same basis with the mysticism of John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila. And this Jesuit priest did not even know he wrote this book, because he didn't. These were his retreat notes that had been gathered 110 years after his death. And they become a book that to this very day continues to be reprinted, reprinted, and reprinted. And I think it's because people see in it the practicality. It's actually been called a book that promotes the mysticism of everyday life. The man, of course, was the Jesuit priest Jean-Pierre de Caussade. And his great monumental spiritual classic, Abandonment to Divine Providence. In that book, Abandonment to Divine Providence, which again are his retreat notes that were gathered 110 years after his death. In those retreat notes, de Caussade talks about the sacrament of the present moment. If the present moment is truly a sacrament, then it is the doorway through which God and angels enter into our lives. And so to live in the present moment is to stand at the doorway where you can encounter God. And that's why it's important to be right here, right now. Because this right here is the place where we encounter God. Think for a moment. Think of Abraham in Genesis chapter 18. Abraham is living in the present moment, and he is suddenly visited by three visitors. God. And because Abraham is living in the present moment, he offers hospitality to these three visitors. And he doesn't even know it's God. Think of the Blessed Mother in Luke chapter 1. She was living in the present moment with her eyes wide open. And so when the angel Gabriel came into her life, she recognized him as a messenger from God, because she was living in the present moment. And that's why this moment and every moment is a sacrament. And we choose to either be present to it or to live in the past with guilt or to live in the future with worry and anxiety. It's a choice that each one of us make, whether to live in this first-class cabin called my life, or to be content to mentally be stuck in the parking lot. But let me tell you something else that De Caussat says in that monumental work. He not only calls the present moment a sacrament, but he even goes so far as to say, quote unquote, every moment we live through is an ambassador that declares the will of God. Let me repeat it. Every moment we live through is an ambassador that declares the will of God. In other words, the will of God for me is manifested right here, right now in front of me, in the sacrament of the present moment. It is an ambassador that is declaring to me what God is asking of me. And that will is declared, God's will is manifested in the unmet need or the required duty of the present moment. Every moment we live through, there is an unmet need or there is a required duty. And that unmet need, that required duty, is the manifestation. It is the ambassador that is telling me right now what God is asking of me. And that's why this is a sacred moment. Because in this moment, as I encounter the man with his hands extended, this is God asking me to stop and offer him some change. In this sacrament of the present moment, the ambassador, the moment, might be asking me to pick up the phone and to call someone whom I should apologize to. This sacred moment, this ambassador, might be asking of me to let go of a grudge that I'm hanging on to. It might be asking me to send an email of comfort to someone who's going through a difficult time. Every moment we live through is an ambassador that is telling you exactly what you need to do. It is declaring God's will for you in the unmet need or the required duty of this present moment. And that is so why, that is why it is so important to get out of the parking lot and to come back to the first class cabin. Because it's right here where God is asking something of you. And so every moment is a sacrament asking something of me in its unmet need or its required duty. And by living in the present moment and by responding to this ambassador, I am doing the will of God. And that is why this moment and every moment is a sacred moment. And you can become holy right where you are simply by living here and responding to what God is asking of you. That's all you got to do. This is the mysticism of everyday life. God, every moment, asking something of you. Now, you might want to object and say, but Father Albert, let me give it to you straight this time. Don't you think it's a little bit irresponsible to forget about the past? Don't you think it's a little bit naive not to plan for the future? And you know what I would say to you? Absolutely. It is irresponsible. And it is naive. But living in the present moment does not mean you have to make a choice. Living in the present moment simply means let the present moment, let this ambassador say to you what God is asking of you. And so if the present moment is asking you to live in the past and to do an examination of conscience, you do an examination of conscience. If this ambassador, if this sacrament of the present moment is asking of you to live in the past and to balance your checkbook, you balance your checkbook. If the ambassador, this sacred moment, if this sacrament is asking of you to live in the future and to plan next week's menu, well, then you plan next week's menu. So it's not a question of choosing between the past, the present, or the future. It simply is a matter of living right now, right here, and allowing the present moment, this ambassador, to declare to me what God is asking of me in the unmet need or the required duty of this present moment. When he was in charge of the young Jesuits preparing for ordination, Pope Francis used to give them this advice. He used to say to them, Do what you are doing, but do it well. That's living in the present moment. Do what you are doing, and do it well, knowing this is what God is asking of you. God is asking of me right now to iron the clothes, and so I do it. This sacrament, this ambassador, is telling me now that I have to be attentive to this meeting. And so, I'm attentive to the meeting. Do what you are doing, and do it well. That, my friends, is why it is important to live in the sacrament of the present moment. Because this is where God's will for me is declared. So the question arises, well, how do you do that? How do you live in the present moment? Well, let me offer to you a four-step method. And after I offer you the method, I'll also be willing to tell you the major criticism people often level against it. But there's a four-step method in living in the present moment. And the first step is this. The first step is simply recollection. And by recollection, what I mean is this, that you stop, you take a breath, and you call yourself out of all the different places you might be bilocating in right now. So you call yourself out of the parking lot, and you come back home to this first-class experience called your life. And so you gather yourself up. You recollect. You recollect yourself and you come back here, right now, right here. And sometimes simply just pausing and taking three deep breaths will bring you back into the first class cabin. After you have recollected yourself, you move to the next step. And I call this step the step of attention. And what I mean by that is this. You attend to what your five senses are picking up. What am I feeling? What am I smelling? What am I eating and tasting? What am I hearing? What am I seeing? Attend to your five senses. And let me tell you why this is important. Because your five senses are the key that open up the tabernacle of the sacrament of the present moment. Your senses are the key that open up the tabernacle. And so that's why it's very important in this second step to dally here and to delight in it. And so you find yourself walking in a florist, and you just get consumed with the smell of freshly cut flowers. And you just dally in that. And you delight. You know why? You know why this is important? Because this sacred moment will never happen again. It is totally unique. It is unrepeatable. And it will never, never, never happen again. Never. After you have recollected yourself, after you have attended to your five senses and you've opened up the tabernacle door of the sacrament of the present moment, you then move to the third step. And I'd like to call the third step reflection. And in this third step of reflection, you simply pause and you ask yourself, what is this ambassador asking of me right now? What is the unmet need? What is the required duty? And that might just be a prayer of adoration to God because of the absolute beautiful aroma of freshly cut flowers. It might be upon reflection that this ambassador, this sacrament, is asking of me to respond to this beggar I find in front of my feet. It might be that this very moment, upon reflection, is asking me in my gut to pick up my phone and to make a phone call, to drop an email. Maybe upon reflection, this ambassador is asking me to sit back and just to rest and to enjoy. And so you simply reflect upon what the present moment, this ambassador, is asking of you. After you have recollected yourself and you've come out of the parking lot, after you have attended to your five senses, and after you have reflected on what you're picking up from the tabernacle, from the sacrament of the present moment, you then move to step number four. And I call step number four, adoration in action. Adoration in action. My recollection, my attention to my senses, and my reflecting call for a response. And this is what I call adoration in action. And so, this might be saying a prayer of gratitude for the gorgeous creation of flowers. This might be responding by picking up the phone and making a call. I always have to respond to whatever the sacrament of the present moment is asking of me in its unmet need or its required duty. Now, a lot of people, when I teach them this four-step exercise, they criticize me. And they say, you know, Father Albert, this sounds kind of contrived, kind of made up. And I say to them, it is. It is contrived, but let me tell you something. If seven times a day, if you would just stop, recollect yourself, attend to your senses, reflect on what the present moment is asking of you, and then to respond with adoration and action, you do that seven times a day, and it's gradually going to become second nature to you. And it's going to gradually grow on you. And all of a sudden, without even having to do it intentionally and deliberately, every day, you're going to be checking in with this sacrament of the present moment. Without even thinking of it, you're going to always be keeping your ears not up in the sky listening to God. You ain't going to hear God up there. You keep your ears down here. Listen to your life. Because God is speaking in every moment. In every person who comes into your life. In every event you find yourself in. In your deepest feelings and emotions. In your most creative thoughts. This is how God is speaking to you. So for goodness sakes, get your head out of the clouds and come on down to this first class experience. Because this is a sacrament. And every moment you live through is an ambassador. That's declaring God's will for you. So listen to your life. That's all you have to do. Let me talk a little bit about the effects of practicing this four-step method of recollection, attention, reflection, adoration, and action. Let me show you what happens as you keep checking in every day. And as this becomes second nature to you, you're going to notice three things occurring. Number one, it's probably best, let me tell a little story about the great Jewish philosopher and mystic, Abraham Joshua Heschel. Rabbi Heschel taught in New York City. And one day, he walked into the classroom for his evening class. And in front of all of the students, he said, "Something extraordinary happened today, and no one noticed it." Well, the students got their curiosity piqued. And so they said, "Well, Rabbi Heschel, what happened?" And he looked at them and he said, "The sun set. The sun set, and no one on Broadway noticed it." The first effect of living in the present moment in your life is wonder and awe. You get caught up when you see a star shooting across the sky. You are moved to tears when you see the oddity of a Venus flytrap or the strange little creature called an armadillo. God was having a good day when he created armadillos. Or you see a magnolia tree in bloom. Or you see the beauty of the Swiss Alps. All of that stuff. Shooting stars, Venus flytraps, armadillo, magnolia trees in bloom. They all remind us there is magic in the air. And that magic is called the presence of God that surrounds us like the air we breathe. You don't have to get anything in the spiritual life. You simply need to become aware of what you already have. The presence of God that surrounds us. And as you live, as you stand at this doorway called the sacrament of the present moment, you come to see that the air crackles with the divine presence. And that moves you to wonder and awe. Secondly, as you live in the sacrament of the present moment, you come to encounter the God of surprise and disguise. In this sacred moment, you will come and experience those 100 angels that I talked about last night. In this sacred moment, you will see how God comes into your life and goes out. How angels come in and go out. You will come to see how God is a God of surprise and disguise. And sometimes, we don't even recognize God. But he's very much there. Jesus tells a very interesting parable in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 25. In Matthew 25, Jesus says how at the end of the world, the Son of Man will come back. And when he comes back, he's going to separate you and me. Like a shepherd separates sheep from goats. And he's going to look at the goats, at the sinners, and he's going to say to them, go into the eternal fire prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you did not give me food. I was thirsty, you did not give me drink. I was naked, you didn't clothe me. I was in prison, in detention center. And you did not visit me. And the goats, in their arrogance, will look at the Son of Man and say, wait a minute, partner. When on earth did we see you hungry or thirsty or naked or in prison? And the Son of Man says, whenever you did not do it to the least of my brothers or my sisters, you did not do it to me. Then Jesus says, the Son of Man will turn to the sheep, to the saints. And he will say to them, come, inherit the home prepared for you from the very first moment of creation. For I was hungry, and you fed me. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was naked, you clothed me. I was in prison, and you visited me. Well, the saints, they're embarrassed. They're turning red. They think he's got it wrong. And so they turn to him and say, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or naked or in prison? And he says, whenever you did it to the least of my brothers and my sisters, you did it to me. Do you see? The sheep, the saints, they were simply doing what the present moment asked them. They saw somebody hungry, they fed them. They saw somebody naked, they gave them clothes. They saw somebody in prison, and they visited them. They weren't seeing Christ in the poor. They were simply responding to the unmet need or the required duty of the present moment. Let me tell you something. Priests always get that parable wrong. Because they always want to say, oh, you got to see Christ in the poor. I am so sick of that glib saying. Show me how you do it, because I don't think you can. And that's not what the parable is about. The parable is simply about responding to what the ambassador of the present moment is asking of you. And that's exactly what the sheep did. Somebody was hungry, they gave him food. Somebody was thirsty, they fed him. They were simply spontaneously responding to the sacrament of the present moment. And without even knowing it, they were encountering the God of surprise and the God of disguise. Finally, and I think this is one of the most important effects of living in the present moment. And it's this. When you live in the present moment, your own path, your life, is validated as a path to holiness. Living in the present moment will be a way that you will come to experience that you, even with all of my sins, and even with all the detours and all the times I fell off the ledge, all of that mess called the shipwreck of my life, that is worthy of God. And God still comes into your life. And so therefore, your own particular path of holiness is validated. And that's why, as I mentioned last night, never apologize for your path to holiness. Because if you're living in the present moment, and if you're keeping your ears to the ground, and you're listening to your life, and you're listening to what this ambassador of the sacrament of the present moment is asking of you, and if you are responding to its unmet need or its required duty, you're on your way to holiness. Don't let anybody else tell you different. Because this is how God calls each one of us in our own unique way. And so, you don't have to be another Francis of Assisi. You don't have to be another Teresa of Calcutta. All you need is to be yourself and to get out of the parking lot and come back to the first class cabin called your life. And there, listen to what God is asking of you. And then, when you hear it, to respond. Because in the end, that is what holiness is all about. Responding to the grace of God that stands in front of you. Are there any, before we wrap this up, any questions, comments, reactions? Yes, sir. Well, the reason why I did that, because I noticed this side looks a little shady. Yes, ma'am. What I always tell people, you know, let me tell you something. So the question is this: if you are battling, let's say, four of the P's, how do you not confuse the 30 consecutive times? Let me tell you something. First of all, most people live with the illusion, and I think this is a cockamamie belief. Most people think that we can reach perfection in this life. You can't. Don't even try. Because I'm going to tell you why. If you shoot for perfection in this life, the devil is going to do a number on you. You're going to become so discouraged, you're going to give up. I see this day in and day out, time and time again. The whole challenge in this life is not perfection, but it's making progress. And every little half an inch a day is progress going forward. That is why Francis got it right. That is why Francis talks about ongoing conversion. Because you never reach perfection here. So don't try. Just start to make progress a little bit a day. And so what I say to people, choose one P, work on that one. And let the other P still, let the other P's bother you for a while. Work on one and get one down pat. And gradually work yourself through it. Because there is no, as I like to tell people, there is no such thing as a microwave oven to holiness. Holiness is made in the crock pot called life. And so you have to cook all day, huh? And that's why I think Francis talks about this ongoing conversion. And it really irritates me because so much here on Catholic radio, people are always talking about you should shoot for perfection in this life. Well, let me tell you something. I know a lot of people who do, and they live with discouragement. And let me tell you something. Discouragement is a very powerful weapon that the devil uses in our lives. Forget about perfection and just go day in, day out to make a little bit of progress, because that's what it's all about. It's about making progress. It's not about becoming perfect. But that's my opinion. Some will disagree. Does that help? So just start with one. Oh, thank you. Yes, Ron? Oh, I thought you had one. Yes, sir. Lee? Huh? Actually, it was. It was locked. And isn't that the doggone bugaboo? We get ourselves so wrapped up in our minds, and the blood pressure goes off, only to discover I should have stuck in that first-class cabin. Yes, Madeline. Senior moment. Oh.
What would you say about a person who just all of a sudden thought that they didn't like their car in the parking lot, but they're at a place where they just left it to God? They said, "Oh God, I'll ask you to take care of that car, even if it isn't locked." And that was not an enjoyable movie.
Well, I mean, that's one way of doing it. Yeah, the other, there were some things we, at 37,000 feet, what is worry going to do? And I think what we don't realize is that worry is just emotional energy that just goes right out the window. It is like having the air condition on and having your windows up. It just goes out. It's like throwing money away. Yeah, and so the thing is, pay attention, live in the present moment, and see what the present moment is asking of you. And the present moment might be saying to you, let it go and just trust. There's nothing you can do about it right now, Albert. And I wish I would have listened to that, but I didn't. So I didn't enjoy the movie, but by the fourth bourbon and coke, I just couldn't care less anyway. Yes. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Uh-huh. Well, I have to tell you, Richard is an extraordinarily talented person. And the one thing that I really appreciate by Richard, and I have to be honest, I'm a little bit envious of him. He is so rooted in the Franciscan tradition, and his gift is he can take traditional Franciscan ideas and make them come alive by the way he writes about them. He's got an extraordinary talent that way. And half the time, most of the people aren't even aware that what he's talking about is a traditional theological concept from the Franciscans of the 15th or 14th century. But because he writes in such a contemporary way, he never violates the tradition. And I think that he's got a marvelous gift in that. Marvelous gift. But I still don't like him. I'm envious. Anybody else? Yes. Nice and loud so we can hear you. We're not. Well, you know, I think you might be living in la la land. Because honestly, we're not countercultural. If we Franciscans truly were countercultural, we would all be on buses, or at least some of us would be on buses. We would be supporting people going down, for instance, to Texas to help all of those people crossing over in the border. We would stand up and make a statement. And we don't. We don't. All we do is we complain about the government, we complain about the president, we complain about this, we complain. But we don't do anything publicly to make a stance. I mean, this was the great insight of Jeremiah the prophet. How sometimes you do, you make, you do, you 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 do things, even though they don't mean anything, you do things to make a statement. And I think we're losing that. We're not countercultural. Oh, I know. Oh, sure. I know some too. But let me tell you something. Maybe I could count 10 of them. Oh, well, I hope so. I just think we have a long way to go. I am never comfortable that we can sit back and say we have done what is ours to do. Because we still have a long way to, and I think Francis got it right as he was dying. I have done what was mine. May Christ teach you yours. And I think we need to really get serious about that. I sure hope so. Because we can make a real dent in society if we were faithful to that. Yes, ma'am. It's Relevant Radio. And so if you go to the App Store, it's a blue app with a picture of Our Lady of Guadalupe. You download it for free, and then you click on podcast, and then you go down to Spirit and Life. And you will get sick of hearing me and my sister. Today's about watermelons. Did you download it, or did I tell you that? Oh, yeah, today. So what we do on the show, every show is the same thing. The first 7 minutes of the show, we do chit-chat, we laugh, we joke, we tease, and then we move into the topic. Today's topic, so today the first 7 minutes of the chit-chat was about watermelon, because tomorrow is National Watermelon Day. So my sister was telling everybody how to buy a watermelon in the grocery store, and I learned something I didn't know. And then the topic for today was, how do you make sense of suffering? So we talked about suffering and how do you respond when you feel as if God has abandoned you. So that was the topic for today's show. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry. If you have a smartphone, an iPhone or an Android, you go to your app store and you type in Relevant Radio. And a little blue icon with an image of Our Lady of Guadalupe will come up. You download it for free, and then you're off and running. Okay? Yeah, because we have evening prayer. Sorry about that.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Jerry.
Living in the present moment, we will now collect ourselves and have evening prayer.